Through it all, we have been supported by the most passionate fan base in the country. These great fans deserve teams that make them proud. It will not be easy, but we will succeed.
Remember the past, but look forward and don't look back.
Now from the studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, this is Three and Out with Nate Hodges and Houston Kress. Many imitators, no duplicators. Fan Run Radio.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride.
It starts with everybody that touches the University of Tennessee.
And that'll do it. Tennessee is going to snap their 11-game conference losing streak.
We got to get better. And everybody, do your job, and it's that simple.
And it is over, and number one goes down. Tennessee comes back to knock off the unbeaten Zags, 76-73.
I'm going to tell you what my expectations are. My expectations is to win every game we play.
I want 100% locked in. You got it?
We can dance if we want to. We can leave your fans behind. Cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, that no friends of mine. See, we can go where we want to, place where they will never find. And we can act like we come from out of this world, leave the real one far behind. We can dance.
Welcome into the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios of Fan Run Radio, Football Friday edition of the program. It's brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Nate Hodges with you, Houston Kress, Davey Hudson, Billy Williford. A full house as we get you set for the weekend in college football, the NFL, and of course, college basketball as Tennessee takes on Washington tomorrow, 5 o'clock tip-off from Scotiabank Arena.
Oh, yeah, Scotiabank, yeah. Mm-hmm. Maple syrup and poutine, eh? No? All right.
Why are they playing in Canada?
James Naismith Classic.
Oh, okay.
He's Canadian. Canadian-American. Like Avril Lavigne.
No, oh, okay.
Who died and has been replaced by someone who looks a lot like him. Kind of like McCartney.
You're right, James Naismith, Canadian-American physical educator, physician, sports coach, and innovator.
In fairness, he did invent basketball in the States.
Okay. He was born in Almonte, Mississippi Mills, Canada.
Mississippi Mills?
That's what it says.
What is that?
I have no idea.
Where is that?
Canada.
Well, there's a lot of that. A lot of Canada. It's big.
Ontario.
Oh, okay. He's an Ontarian.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's called?
I don't know. That's a good question.
We're Tennesseans. San Diegan. San Diegites.
We're Tennesseans.
San Diegan. San Diegans.
So I would think on
a Wales.
Ontario. Ontarioans.
I know one knows what it means.
Ontarians.
Doesn't it mean Saint Diego?
Nah, that
can't be
right.
No. No, that's what it means.
Almonte is a former mill town located in Lanark County in the eastern portion of Ontario, Canada. Formerly a separate municipality, Almonte is now a ward of the town of Mississippi Mills, which was created on January the 1st, 1998.
Oh, wow.
I just thought I would slow
down.
It was
a good year.
That date.
It was a good year.
It was a good year. It's the start of something special.
Yeah.
1990. Now you
those
know.
Were the days. Glad we tidied that up.
Did he invent basketball in Kansas? It says he died in Lawrence, Kansas. That would be.
I thought it was in like New York. At the
maybe.
YMCA or something?
Yeah, it was a YMCA. I believe that's right.
It might not be New York, though.
It says he founded the University of Kansas basketball program, but that could have been after.
He did?
That's what it says.
I did not know that.
He's the only coach. This will win you a bar bet. The only coach in Kansas men's basketball history with a losing record. Hate to see it.
I mean, after your own game, too, that's just it's pretty bad.
To invent the game and then get
that would never happen
bashed.
To one
yeah, you feel like
William Houston Krebs.
Yeah, you invent SEC Survivor, you win SEC Survivor. I invented the game. I need to be pretty good at it.
You feel like if the other team is beating you, you just change the rules a little bit to catch
exactly.
on up. I mean, it's like, and they can't argue with you. You're the creator. It's like, whoa,
right.
whoa, this is what I mean.
Yeah, this was the intent.
Yeah.
You guys aren't applying this correctly.
Go to replay. We'll
yeah.
check it out.
Yeah. Team comes in with a bunch of really tall guys, and you create,
too tall.
Create the three-second lane.
No dunking allowed.
Right. There was a point where you couldn't dunk in college basketball.
It's like, man, these guys can hit shots from far away. Three-point line does not exist. It will come back later, though.
Foul. Double foul. Jackie, you just can't fly through the air. And
man, this other coach keeps arguing with the refs and getting all the calls. Technical foul. Here's what this means. Oh, he had a nice mustache, James Naismith.
Springfield College is where he invented... You know, at the Springfield YMCA, while he was at Springfield College, is where he invented basketball.
Which is Massachusetts? I knew it was New England.
The College Basketball Hall of Fame is in Kansas City. I did get to visit that.
In case you were wondering about the history of the James Naismith Classic and James Naismith, that's what we decided to lead the show off with today.
It's a big basketball game.
It's a hot topic of conversation. How do we start the show? And this is exactly what we decided on.
I mean, there's no other stories that every single other sports show in the world is starting on today.
We did not just accidentally stumble into this. We absolutely 100% planned it. Nate was dead set on this. So here we are. Sean tweets in, Springfield College, Springfield, Massachusetts, James Naismith. Yes. Mason Howell tweets in also, scholars maintain the translation was lost many, many years ago.
Did you know basketballs used to have football laces on them?
I did not.
That seems like it would make dribbling
very difficult.
Did you know the first hoops were peach baskets?
Yeah.
It's from a Geico commercial.
They didn't have, and the goal didn't have a backboard.
They also didn't cut the bottoms out of the peach basket
first,
until
yeah.
Later when they kept having to go up and get it out of the peach basket.
I think it was like the next day.
No, I'm just saying it first.
Yeah.
But in fairness, it took them a long time to score. We're talking like soccer now was basketball back then.
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't dribble at first, so the laces didn't really matter.
Well, when women started playing, it was 3-on-3 half court, and you would get the ball and pass it to the other
your forwards.
Yeah.
The guards only played defense.
Yep. So it was 6-on-6 women's basketball because they didn't think women could run full court.
My grandmother played 6-on-6 on the stage at her high school.
Was she a baller? Cause she
probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. History of basketball. 3 and out. Boom.
It's a big one. It could shape the future of Tennessee basketball tomorrow evening.
I mean.
I'm just kidding. It's not that
okay, good. I was like, man, you're really, really trying to sell this, and I just don't think that's necessary.
Well, after learning about how all the other SEC teams kind of suck, I'm wanting to say these non-conference games become that much more important. Florida State, whoever you get in the winner or loser game of that tournament, you got this one tomorrow. I mean, there's good news, bad news. Like, the good news is your schedule might not be as tough in conference as Vanderbilt lost, Florida could have lost, Kentucky's already lost. I mean, I still think they'll be pretty good, but you know what
I'm not going to say Florida should have lost, but they definitely could have lost. Towson went kind of bonehead there. Towson, yeah.
Yeah.
In case you were wondering who they played.
Yeah.
Towson.
T-O-W-S-O-N.
They played him in football.
Well, yeah.
They played him in football, too.
I was
going to
say,
right.
Like, the AD's got to have some connection with the people at Towson
yes.
to schedule it in both their main sports.
Yes.
Yeah. They won by 6.
And it was not that close. It was closer than the 6.
Towson
had a 3-point lead with, like, 2 minutes to go. And then Florida ties it. Maybe they went up by 1. Towson tries to take a 3, misses it. Florida hits 2 free throws. Towson comes down, runs no offense, jacks up another three. Florida gets the rebound, and like I said, they hit some free throws at the end to pull away.
They're no Evansville.
Towson is no Evansville. But then, yeah, to Nate's point, Richmond beats Vanderbilt 93-92 in overtime.
That's a sneaky good program.
Richmond?
Yeah.
Despite us. Well, apparently Vanderbilt, Aaron Naismith?
No way.
N-E-S-M-I-T-H. Had 34 points last night.
All right.
For Vanderbilt. Make a little note.
All right.
Naismith. Guard him. Should be pretty easy to remember.
Yeah.
Considering Naismith is the founder of basketball.
As
and this guy
know.
Apparently pretty
well,
good.
The Canadian-American.
I mean, this isn't really a positive, but these other SEC teams, they are getting their looses out of the way early.
They...
Good point by you, Davey.
Quite a few looses going around for the SEC. A lot of games tonight in the SEC.
Really?
Yeah, Auburn, Georgia, like? Ole Miss, South Carolina, Alabama, and Texas A&M all play tonight.
You know why?
Football
they
tomorrow.
All got big football games. Yeah, yeah. Good schedule.
No, I was just saying, tonight, really good night in the SEC.
Mm-hmm. Who was it complaining about their... Oh, it was the Pitt football coach, I guess, was complaining that they put the Steelers on mm-hmm. the same night the Pitt Panthers were playing.
Oh.
So no Pittsburgh, you know...
They won in overtime last night.
Double fans.
Well, if you're a Pittsburgh fan, you probably should have gone to the Pitt Panthers game and not watch the Steelers because that was a nightmare.
Yeah, I'm out of NFL Eliminator. Just bring on the shame. Bring it on.
Out on that NFL Eliminator. Bad. Lost a few coins on the Steelers there. But
so
betting against the Browns the rest of the way might not be a bad idea because the defensive line's taking a pretty big hit, I imagine. Speaking of taking a big hit, Mason Rudolph also took a big hit by a helmet to his head. It was his own helmet. Because if you missed it last night, Myles Garrett, with 5 seconds to go in the game, hits Rudolph after he's gotten a pass off, continues to drive him to the ground. Rudolph takes exception to such a play, starts jostling. Players lock up, start pushing and shoving. Myles Garrett rips off Mason Rudolph's helmet, strikes him in the head with it, and then a melee ensues. Derek Barnett would never do such a thing. You know, it's funny. I always thought Derek Barnett would be the one who did something like, ooh, man, because uh-huh. he has kind of a temper.
Yeah.
I never thought Myles Garrett would do something stupid, let alone this stupid.
Well,
I mean, this is maybe the dumbest thing we've ever seen a defensive end do.
Yes.
And I never thought Myles Garrett would be capable. I'm not saying he would never make a dumb decision, but this, whoo.
This tops the Albert Haynesworth face stomp, in my opinion. Granted, the ultimate outcome was not as severe. I mean, the guy Haynesworth stomped on was pretty bad. But if you're looking at Myles Garrett in this situation, if he hits Rudolph the right way, that could lead to serious, serious injury. Like, I'm surprised,
well,
honestly, taking the helmet
to the
head.
He hit him with the bottom of the helmet. Like, yeah. I'm with you. Like, if that hits him like with a corner of the bottom or that could have sliced him right open if it hit him on the forehead. Luckily, it hit him on the hair. He might still have a cut.
But
could have been bad.
It was a nasty, nasty game. I mean, Rudolph got helmet-to-helmet hit in the first half. Juju Smith-Schuster took two shots to the head on the same play. Had to miss the rest of the game with a concussion. I think that's his third documented concussion for Smith-Schuster. So, obviously, that's starting to get kind of dangerous. And then Deontay Johnson of the Steelers, I mean, got just – I mean, the classic, like, cover two look – pass down the sideline, safety comes over and just launches right into your head, just destroyed the guy. He goes down, and then the safety for the Browns like has the gall to kind of like act like it wasn't that big a deal. They flagged the play immediately. They had time because the dude was basically out cold, couldn't walk. So then they ejected the Browns player for that. So it's all was kind of boiling throughout the game.
It looked as though the Browns were out there headhunting pretty early. I don't really have a dog in this fight.
Well, the AFC North in general is the dirtiest division.
They do not like each other.
I was going to bring that up.
The dirtiest division.
Browns, Bengals, Steelers.
And Ravens.
The Ravens are clean now. They used to be dirty.
When the Ravens and Bengals would get together.
Back in the day?
Back in the, I mean, not that
line. No. I'm saying
if Vontaze Burfict was at the Bengals, they played anybody.
Like them and the Steelers 3 years ago.
Right.
Antonio Brown. That might have been the play that killed Antonio Brown's career.
I saw the
good point
graphic shown on ESPN, but it was breaking down the biggest suspensions in like NFL history as far as in-game situations or hits. And Vontaze Burfict holds three of the top five. And granted,
he got suspended for the year this year.
Yeah,
didn't
he got suspended 12 games this year for another hit. But his problem is like he just keeps doing it. So they're looking at his history as far as how they are penalizing him.
His are kind of,
suspending him moving forward.
I'm going to say his are at least within the game.
Yes.
I'm not saying they're not as dirty as they possibly can be, but they are typically between whistles or slightly after a whistle, and they are technically football plays. Yeah. Swinging a helmet at a man's head after the whistle. I mean, if that had been Tom Brady and not Mason Rudolph, he might be done forever. They might just say, Myles Garrett, never again.
Freddie Kitchens, like, does not have control of his team. He does, he's just telling them to basically just do whatever.
He probably gave him the old, like, we're backed into a corner, whatever it takes, come out with your hair on fire. Guys, it's still a game, jeez.
It's very ironic. I was filling in for Russell on the drive last night, and Trey Bear and I were kind of talking about just seeing something happen to where Bear asked the question, he's like, have you ever seen a situation where you could possibly face a lawsuit for something that happened during
the game? Happens in hockey all the time.
In hockey, that happens. I've never really... I mean, football and basketball are the main sports I follow, and I've never really seen anything get
baseball,
to that level.
Wasn't there some argument a while back about baseball?
There might have been.
Like, intentionally hitting someone, if you hit them in the head, like, there was an argument for a while, like, that could be technically attempted murder.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of times you see people that if they have a certain skill set, they can list their hands as, like, a
very
weapon.
Particular set, like, of skills.
Yeah, a weapon that could get to the point of...
Obviously, you swing a baseball bat at someone, that's pretty clear. I don't know if a football helmet is considered a lethal weapon. It's a blunt force object, but I don't know how this works out. I mean...
You know what?
Definitely assault and battery.
What's interesting to me is the NFL doesn't have the fight on their website.
Of course not.
So...
That's like Neyland Stadium not showing a review unless it's a good play by Tennessee. Like, well, nope, didn't happen. Sorry. Moving on. Eyes forward, please.
But what was crazy, too, we haven't even got to, is after Garrett swings the helmet and hits Rudolph, the Steelers players start kicking and punching Garrett while
he's on the
ground.
Kicking him while he's on the ground. And then Rudolph is just standing there looking at
him come off the bench.
I thought some did. Rudolph puts his arms in the air and looks at the ref, and then another Browns player comes in and hits him to the ground, and then the Steelers' offensive line turns around and sees that, then they go after this guy. I mean, this is all on Myles Garrett. You've won the game. The ball's out. Just stop. Just be done. But no, he wants to drive him to the ground. Rudolph, as I said, took exception to it. It's like, hey, you're already beating us. There's no need to do this. And then...
Yeah, guys did come off the bench a little bit. But they're just...
I mean, it wasn't like a two benches clearing brawl. There wasn't, you know, 110 guys on the field swinging at each other. But I thought I did see some guys, you know, waddle over.
They play again on December 1st.
That's 2 weeks.
We're going to flex that one to prime time.
Cancel it.
It's going to be bad. In Pittsburgh.
That's why I think they're going to set such a harsh...
They have to, yeah.
...sentence here for the parties involved.
Yeah.
So Garrett's not even in at that game?
Oh, I don't even think he plays again this season.
Yeah,
Well, no, I wasn't asking a question. I was just kind of saying, like, they're going to set a sentence.
He definitely...
You mentioned that when we first started the show. I hadn't, you know, talked about...
If you're the NFL with all the other things on the field that are kind of going wrong, right, like reviews, targeting. I know there's not technically targeting, but, like, you're already kind of worried about, like, fans not being as interested in the game anymore because you've changed it so much with rules, which are intended to safeguard players. I'm all for that. This is something you cannot have in your game. Like, we all love fights in baseball. I guess that's just because it's like a classic thing. If you're the NFL, you can't be the league that just has on-the-field brawls all the time. I mean, don't get me wrong. It would be very exciting, and I would like it, but you just can't have that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think I've seen anything like this since Malice in the Palace. And that was even still different, because, I mean, it's obviously the fans are getting involved at that point.
I'm watching the, like, kind of the extended highlight of it. I love how the white hat guy just lets the lineman fight and just goes and gets Mason Rudolph. It's like, you can tell the NFL's like, just protect the quarterbacks. Protect.
Well, he throws the flag.
He also doesn't have his helmet on.
He throws the flag, then Miles hits him with the helmet. And then, yeah, the white hat just is like, I'm out of here. He just backs up. He's like, people are swinging. These guys are four times my size. I'm not getting caught up in the middle. No chance. But, you know, I thought once you threw the flag and there was another penalty, you were supposed to throw your hat.
Throw the hat.
He kept his hat on his head. Lazy. That's your second flag, man. You got to toss it.
Well, both head coaches came out into the end zone. I mean, if that tells you anything.
To fight each other?
No, they were
Kitchens versus Tomlin. Like that, I'd watch that.
When they finally got back from the review as far as who was being ejected, and of course it was unsportsmanlike conduct on both teams that were offsetting penalties, but there was so much information that the ref had to read. He had a note card that he was reading as he was giving the or as he was talking about like who all was out and like what the actual penalties are.
They need that the SEC ref who did Bama LSU. That guy is like the best information explainer after a certain like we needed that guy. Cuz he would have absolutely had a laundry list and made it very clear what happened when, who and why and then the subsequent ejections. Did not think we'd see anything quite like this.
I don't. What? I'm not even sure why. I don't know. I'm watching the start of it again. I just don't get. I don't understand Miles Garrett.
No, yeah. Rudolph got mad that he got hit, but then Garrett, like.
Lost, like, snaps
so
bad.
Yeah. And I don't know why.
I mean, he was on top of Rudolph. Rudolph was.
Trying to get him off of him.
Was mashing it. At first, I was
he
like,
did kind of push his helmet.
Did Rudolph, like, put his hands inside Garrett's face?
Didn't look like it.
I think Garrett has a. I can't tell. Does he have a? It looks like he has a shield. He definitely didn't put his hands inside his face mask. I mean, that's one thing that really can set somebody off in a hurry. You start poking them in the eyes through their face mask, but he definitely didn't do that.
Somebody said that they thought it looked as
Garrett
though
has a shield.
Well,
I mean, he
there's
can't even,
that, but no, as if Rudolph's hand was somehow caught in the back of Garrett's helmet.
A Cash Daniels situation.
I didn't see it like that. But, I mean, there were people trying to make that argument.
No, that's – I don't think so. It looked like Rudolph was kind of pushing up underneath the bottom of Garrett's helmet, and it started to kind of lift a little
bit.
Yeah.
And then Garrett was like, let me show you how to take a helmet off.
I mean, neither quarterback was good last night. I mean, if you're looking at Rudolph's stats, he was 23 of 44 for 221 yards with one touchdown and four interceptions.
Four picks.
He was sacked four times for 43 yards. He had a QBR of 10.8, and his passer rating was 36.3. So, I mean, he was already frustrated, and like his line did not do him any favors during the game.
They couldn't protect him at all. And then, not to mention, James Conner goes out of the game almost immediately. Like
he wasn't ready to play.
At first couple carries, I was like, why did he bounce that outside? Why is he bouncing that? He didn't want to hit anybody.
No,
he had a shoulder injury, and he was done. Then Smith-Schuster goes out with the concussion. And so, I mean, they're throwing the ball to receivers you've never heard of.
Yeah, they definitely should have just rolled with Samuels and just rested Connor one more week.
That's the thing. I wonder if Samuels beat up because he didn't play as much as Edmonds did. And Edmonds sucks. I mean,
Was Edmonds ahead of Samuels? Technically,
I don't know.
Was pretty good when he was healthy.
I thought Edmonds
was. He was listed as healthy on the.
He's got a brother, but I thought he was a defensive player.
Who?
Edmonds.
No, I don't know. Oh. Where's 33? He was terrible. I mean, he looked like, you know how LeGarrette Blount looks really, really slow, like when he would play?
Yes.
But he would always at least fall forward. Edmonds was like that slow, but no, like, power.
Because Terrell and Trey Edmonds were both drafted in the first round, or actually, wait, Tremaine Edmonds and Terrell. I believe. Were both drafted in the first round a couple of years ago, but I thought they were both defensive players.
Mason Rudolph looks wobbly even after this fight. Like, I don't know if
he got crunched in the head with a helmet.
I wonder if he got concussed on that first half play and was just kind of cobwebs all night. I mean, he threw some bad picks. He's also shell-shocked.
Honestly, I think he might have got it right here. Watch this. Whiplash coming in. Three. Boom.
Yeah.
He comes in. He hits. Is that Pouncey? Who was that? Who's 66? I need numbers.
For the Browns?
No. For the guy who hits. Well, they backtracked. So right when Rudolph gets hit down to the ground a second time by some, I don't even know who that was, one of the offensive linemen turns around and sees it and then goes after the new contestant in the fight. James Giannis tweets in, says, I know I'm biased as a Steelers fan, 65. But I don't know that you can really get mad at Pouncey for going after Miles. Pouncey apparently got so mad he blacked out. I know. I'll never be mad at an offensive lineman for trying to stand up for his quarterback, especially after something like that. Are you kidding me? I would have picked up Rudolph's helmet and hit Miles with it. So I'll see you in the suspension tent.
Pouncey's 53 for the Steelers. Jumping on him, punching him, kicking him in the helmet, getting on the ground, punching him again. I mean, he's punching him in the helmet.
Stupid.
It's DeCastro that's on top of Miles Garrett. Oh, man.
Pouncey lost it. When Garrett swung the helmet and hit Rudolph, Pouncey, you can just tell. He went from, hey, man, what's going on, to, I don't know where I am.
And I'm curious to see kind of just how the NFL wants to look at that as far as the offensive lineman sticking up for his quarterback, because as we've talked about, I mean, it's a quarterback-driven league. You can't have the quarterbacks being hurt. And so do they kind of take it a little bit easier on Pouncey? Real quick, there's Trey Edmonds is the running back for the Steelers, but Tremaine and Terrell are linebacker. One's a linebacker, one's a safety. Both of Terrell and Tremaine were
drafted. Why are we talking about these guys?
Because Edmonds is the running back for the Steelers.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with anything.
Thanks for clearing it up.
We're talking about one specific play. Edmonds.
If you want to see the best video of the fight, just search on YouTube. There's a great clip where you get to see the helmet just absolutely
the slow mo
destroy.
He does like the Rock'em Sock'em Robot thing, like where the spine goes down and then right back out.
I paused at a great time here. Just like whack.
That's not a great spot. There's one right after that where his face is like this.
I mean, the helmet's starting to bend. I think that's kind of a good spot.
Just slow play that. You'll find it. All right. That was Rudolph's first game back. Or how many games did he play? Two?
Oh, he had played some.
After the late hit by Earl Thomas. Brinks tweeted that in. Were they trying to bang up Rudolph again because he's back?
Probably.
I think the Steelers would have liked to have had Josh Dobbs on the roster last night.
Yeah. Yeah. He could have at least run away from some of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, the game was 14-7 until, you know, that final Rudolph pick. The last two picks he threw were kind of like, you knew they couldn't run the ball. You knew they were just going to have to try and throw it and go down the field. I mean, he threw the next last pick, it looked like he kind of had to short arm it because the guy was getting pushed right back in his lap. It was just bad all around.
His face is getting smushed by his own helmet.
The thing about it is,
Garrett's pretty strong, too. I bet that had some force behind it.
During this game, they were showing the playoffs in the AFC, and the Steelers are actually in as a wild card. Now they lost, so I guess they'll be out now after the weekend, I'm sure. But the Browns, even with the win, are only like 4-6, so they'd have to go on a pretty good run.
But they're not dead.
They're not dead. And the schedule is pretty easy.
Garrett might be dead.
But now they're going to be missing their best player up front. And that was a big part of the game, was that the Steelers couldn't run the football, and once they couldn't run it, they couldn't pass protect. So pretty wild.
Finally, they had a mobile guy back there.
Mm. You hate to see it.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Okay. It's a Football Friday edition of the program brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Check them out online.
And Round Ball.
Do we like Round Ball?
Short for basketball.
Basketball Friday edition of the program.
Okay.
God, you just surprised me with that, wasn't it?
Round Ball Friday.
I was trying to talk about the
Sounds
TVA
better than
Employees
Basketball Friday.
Credit Union.
You should
here
do that. Go
Knoxville
ahead. Go
for
ahead.
85 years. I mean, they got a 3.75% APR right now as an auto rate special. So if you're doing some car shopping, you know, make sure you shop around on your rate. Make sure you check out the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union, and you can get your loan right there. Thankful for miles spent together. TVACreditUnion.com. And, of course, they've got you covered for all sorts of services. Anything a bank can do, the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union can do that, too. And debit, credit cards, loans on your, you know, car, boat, home, they got you covered. Check them out online at TVACreditUnion.com. I don't know. I just never really liked round ball.
Okay.
Round ball? I mean, I don't know. I guess it's okay. Not really against it.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I mean, you bring up a good point, though. Should we not call it Football Friday since Tennessee doesn't play football?
No, I said it's a football / round ball Friday.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of football, so I guess that's okay. But do we want to, I guess we'll get to the basketball game and break it down more now. And there's tons of football to talk about, obviously, throughout the program. We got to, get to new SEC Survivor drawings. The week always goes so much faster when you're safe. I feel like when you have
that
big bad punishment on Wednesday, you kind of dread it. Then the Wednesday show takes forever, especially if you're having to like consume something all show. And then there's the aftermath. And then all of a sudden, eventually you get to Friday. Well, this week, just three of us safe, makes it easy. So now we'll draw. And this will probably be the week one of us gets Tennessee, and they'll be on bye. I'll have to draw again. Did anybody have Tennessee this year at all?
No, they haven't been drawn once.
Did they get drawn last year? Mm-hmm. Once?
Once or twice, yeah.
All right.
I have.
Yet Arkansas has been seven times? Eight now?
I think it's still six.
No, it's seven.
Seven?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's at least seven.
All right. Well, let's get to the phone lines. Let's grab Seth before we move along. What's up, Seth? You're on 3 and Out.
Guys, doesn't it feel good to be on a bye week where we're not trying to figure out what the heck our football team's doing?
Yeah. Yeah. We just get to sit back and say, they're getting healthy, they're playing well, feels good.
Yeah.
Our opponents have difficult games. This is fantastic.
I was thinking, because I was listening to the show, and, you guys have kind of just been going around different things. And I'm like, man, if this was like a normal Tennessee bye week, is usually us trying to figure out.
What can we do? How can we fix it?
What are we going to do, guys? Like, but it feels nice to be on a bye week and you're just like, man, I'm excited for these last two games. I just get to enjoy some football without feeling like, without it reminding me of the, how terrible
the hurt,
Tennessee is.
The pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we just get to kick our feet up, watch a little Tennessee basketball and a lot of college football tomorrow.
Yeah. How you guys think that game's going to go tomorrow in basketball?
I don't know, to be honest with you, Seth. I don't know enough about Washington. I'll probably try to watch some of their highlights from the first couple games during some of the breaks today before we really dive into it. It's weird to me that the BPI on ESPN has you as like a 74% favorite. I haven't seen a betting line on that game, but I imagine they've come out today. I don't know. If we can play like you did in the second half against Murray State, yeah, you can probably play with just about anybody in the country, but that first half will get you beat if you do that again by maybe anybody else in the country.
I think Washington's a better team as far as their players go, but I don't know. I just feel kind of good about going up on a neutral court. I think you're going to get an inexperienced Washington team. I know we're not experienced, but you at least got some guys on that team that in Lamonte Turner and Jordan Bowden that have been in a situation like this before. And really over the last 2 years, I thought Rick Barnes has done a really good job of having these players get into games that are on neutral sites, looking at like last year when you played Gonzaga out in Arizona and just
Kansas too.
Yeah. So
played well.
Yeah.
I feel like you have that going in your favor.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to say that like Washington's type of team, I don't think I've watched Washington play in like since they have kind of, been a little bit higher up on the chain of college basketball teams. I don't think I've watched them in like the past 3 years. But, just from looking at some of their box scores, it seems like they're a type of team that likes to slow down the tempo and kind of just run their offense. I still think I feel like our three-point defense was improved against Murray State. I mean, I honestly, they were 7-for-10 from three. I mean, there was a couple times where we were kind of allowing, you know, we'd have we'd allow someone on defense to just be open on the three-point line. We kind of just would, like, blow a coverage or something. But I felt like our three-point defense and our length makes it a lot harder to shoot threes. I felt like Murray State hit a lot of threes that just weren't, you know, were kind of contested, kind of hard to hit, and they just were making good shots. And then when, you know, they stopped hitting those in the second half, it kind of kept them from pulling away from us, and we were actually able to make that run. So I don't know how Washington plays, but I'm going to listen to you guys. Maybe you guys can show some, maybe like what they like to run. But from the box scores I saw, it seems like they like to slow the game down, run some offense. I don't know, like maybe if they try to get an open three. If that's the type of game plan they like to play, I like our chances just getting out and running and, you know, trying to speed up the game.
Thanks for the call, Seth. The first thing is they're a 2-3 zone team, I believe. Their coach, you know, came from like Syracuse, and so that's going to be a whole different look than, you know, teams Tennessee's played the first couple of games. I know Murray State went to a little odd front zone, a little 1-3-1 action for, you know, a few possessions, but you know, the 2 5-star guys, Jaden McDaniels and Isaiah Stewart, that, you know, that's one of the reasons I would guess. I haven't watched their games this year yet, but they were good defensively last year, and I'm assuming that with these two guys inside, they're going to be good again throughout this season on defense.
They have the third best defense when it comes to 2-point percentage for opponents, and they
2-3 zone makes sense.
And they have the first ranked block percentage.
I did notice that when I was looking at they're averaging 11 a game.
Yeah,
pretty good.
Isaiah Stewart 6'9", 240 in the middle of the zone.
The thing about slowing it down is they kind of do that. Like they're really the middle of the pack when it comes to tempo.
Okay,
right now. But they can speed it up. Like Isaiah Stewart and Jaden McDaniels both can get the rebound and lead the fast break, even as bigs. They're just that good. And then, as you mentioned, like both of them are 5-stars. Both of them are projected to go in the lottery next year. Some have Isaiah Stewart as high as 5.
Pretty good.
And McDaniels, as a big, likes to take the 3, too. The good thing about this so far is their 2-3 zone hasn't been good at guarding the 3-point line. They rank, like, lower 200s in the nation, and Tennessee is top 10 at shooting the 3 right now at 46.2%.
It's going to be that classic, you don't want to just settle for 3s if you're Tennessee, but you do want to create some good opportunities and then knock them down if they're – especially if they're struggling to defend. Because I know last year overall their defense was pretty good. At least what I was reading a preview from a couple months ago, but kind of a before the season big Washington preview by one of their guys, and they were talking about how good they had been on defense the year before. And obviously they got a lot of new pieces this year, so it sounds like they're having a little trouble settling into how to guard the perimeter with their new recruits.
Go ahead, Davey.
I was going to say, like, whenever you're looking at their rotation, they really only have 6 guys that they've played a lot.
Yeah,
so
shallow
far.
Bench. But you can get away with that a lot playing zone. You're just not.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're able to attack and get Stewart into foul trouble, like, that's probably your best plan. But, I mean, he's pretty athletic and does a good job of avoiding body contact to where you're going to have to force the refs to blow the whistle.
Still cannot find a line on this game, FYI. Not one on ESPN, not one on MyBookie, not one on Vegas Insider.
Yeah, last year they were 4th at turning opponents over. Their defense ranked 25th inside the 3-point line, 4th in a block percentage. I think what Tennessee, and we can dive into this, and curious to see your guys' thought on this, but a 2-3 zone, you have to attack the middle free throw line. Last year Tennessee could do that with Grant and Admiral, and even Bone was fantastic at splitting the first two defenders up.
Bowden, too, on that free throw line turnaround jumper.
I mean, you had a ton of guys. And to that point, I was about to make, like, I only feel comfortable with saying Bowden can attack the middle of the 2-3 zone right now.
I think Turner can get in there.
Yeah, I think Turner can.
Okay.
He's got that little pull-up jumper, the floater shot. But can he get it on the move? Can he get it off the bounce?
And it just feels different. I mean, I remember coaching against zone. I hated coaching against zone teams. Hated it. Because it was just it was just different, you know. And then if as a coach you like to be able to kind of run your stuff and put people in the right spots, and against zone you almost have to trust your players more to just play to the space, make the right decision, move the basketball. And you know, I know Washington's a young team. Tennessee is kind of this weird combination of a couple veterans that'll be out there almost the whole game. And then I mean, Pons is kind of a vet. Fulkerson's kind of a vet, but they still are in new roles. It's like, how will they handle trying to operate into space against, you know, a couple of 6'9", you know, five-star recruits? It's going to be fascinating to watch.
Washington actually has one of the youngest teams in the nation, 336 out of, like, 353.
So I kind of agree with Davey. I think on a just straight talent measurement, Washington has more, but from experience, playing in a neutral site, there's a lot of – intangibles that could go Tennessee's way.
Should be noted, Washington started the season on a neutral site against Baylor. Got the win.
Got the win, 67-64. We'll come back with more basketball. Final segment, hour one, right here on 3 and Out. Final segment, hour number one of the program, live from the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios, Fan Run Radio. Pick you up some Truly for the weekend. You have to stop by the grocery store. I think I'm on my way home. Get some of the rosé. Still number one in my power rankings. But, you know, there's some new flavors they're working on, so look for those coming.
Lemonade.
At some point. Be good.
Could be very good.
Mm-hmm. Truly Hard Seltzer, only 100 calories and quite refreshing. Pick it up for your, you know, if you're having a party to watch Tennessee basketball or just hanging out this weekend. Pick up some Truly Hard Seltzer. We got it for you at the grocery store, convenience store, all over the place. Drink what you truly want. Truly Hard Seltzer. So we're diving into Washington, the Huskies. They did get a pretty big win in their opener, neutral site game against Baylor, 67-64. Billy and I have been watching clips from that game. They also beat Mount St. Mary's in game number two. And the two big guys, both 6'9", five-star, true freshmen. And then what's funny is I was reading this preview of Washington basketball, and the writer was like, well, in 2020, this will be quite a green spot in like the starting lineup breakdown. Well, as we know, and we're frustrated by, they got him eligible. He's the transfer from Kentucky. So he's also playing for Washington.
Must be nice to get your transfers cleared like that.
Yeah.
Can't relate.
Yeah. The two five-stars inside, Jaden McDaniels is the, I guess, would play the four, and Isaiah Stewart plays the five. But both 6'9" athletic guys with length and make that 2-3 zone tough to score on inside.
Jaden McDaniels actually plays a lot of the three right now. But, yeah, 3-4. So, 6'9", huge guy playing the three. Yeah. And in that zone defense, I was telling you, it looks 2-3, and then they match up at times. However, sometimes they, like, switch it into a 3-2, and Jaden is the middleman in the at the top of the 3-2.
Oh.
So he makes it very difficult to attack the middle of the zone. It's going to be tough.
Do they come out of the zone ever?
No. The way I'm reading, no, in every possession I've seen here early in this game, no.
Okay.
Just like Billy's mentioning, it looks like they match up a little more than the classic Syracuse. Obviously, the Syracuse zone is a matchup zone.
Sure.
But they... Boeheim is kind of like a Mike Leach philosophy, like always run the same thing and be the best at it type of deal.
Yeah.
It looks like the Washington coach mixes that up a little more, and that if you try and go odd against their even front, they'll just morph it so they match you, so that they end up odd on that same possession, which is really pretty genius.
if you're going to run a zone, I feel like that if you can get your players to buy in and understand those concepts, I feel like that's the way to do it.
Got to make shots tomorrow.
Got to create shots. I mean, we've talked about that.
And then make
I agree, but we've talked about that. Like, where are you going to find shot creation?
Well, Turner did that really, really well for other people against Murray State. I mean, he had 14 assists. I keep wanting to give him 15. I think it was 14.
I think Turner might actually, or he could be even better against a zone, because his one kind of minus is he's just not as quick as typical big-time point guards in college basketball. But he's, like you mentioned, his acceleration, his kind of hesitation and then go, his burst is good.
Yeah.
And so he kind of makes up for it. And when you are on offense, you get to decide how to set that up. And so against a zone, like, he won't have somebody – we won't have one guy just always in his hip pocket. Like that's my fear against some of the better teams, is that Lamonte's going to have somebody on him that's just so quick that it's really hard for him to create stuff. But against the zone, I feel like he'll be able to pick his times to gap dribble and create two to guard him and then kick.
Against zone, it's more about being efficient and methodical as opposed to lightning – fast.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, oh, they're in man, I blow by my guy, wide open layup. It's create space, get to the open, you know, area, have them react, and then where their weakness ends up appearing, that's where you go with the basketball.
Billy,
going to be able to hit some threes tomorrow. That's going to be big.
Have you watched much of their zone? I was curious if, I know you said Stewart's in the middle. How high up is he willing to come?
3-point line.
All the way to the 3-point line.
Yep. What he's saying is when Washington goes with an odd front zone, he's playing the top, the tip of the zone.
Okay,
yeah.
And then when they were in a 2-3 on some possessions, he was the center in the zone in the classic 2-3.
Okay,
so they'll basically just invert. They'll pull the center all the way up and turn it into basically what I mean. They just match whatever Baylor's doing. So it sometimes looks like an expanded 3-2 if Baylor's trying to space. Or if they try and pound it in, it looks like a little kid's 1-2-2, you know.
Well, and another concept to this is what I've noticed so far is, depending on how the fast break goes for Baylor, each player can virtually play anywhere on the court in that zone.
Yeah. I mean, because obviously, one of the best ways to break a zone, obviously, get the ball in the middle. I don't know who you have that you feel confident with. Because last year, you'd try to just get the ball into Admiral or Grant right there in the middle. Who's your guy this year you're trying to do that with?
Maybe this is the game Josiah goes crazy. Right there in the middle, free throw line jumper.
He'd be the guy. If he was physically a creator as advertised, that'd be the guy to do it.
Yeah, if you're talking body type, right? Yeah. That's the guy. But can he do that? He is a good passer, yeah.
I don't know.
But if he can't hit that shot, that's a problem. Yeah. You can always invert it and put a guard in there. But the problem then is, if they catch it, can they score, especially against this link?
Has Pons improved enough to where you might want to put him there?
He's an option.
I think you flash him in there. I don't know that,
It just goes back to the unknowns of this.
My guess
team
is
so far.
Tennessee won't just post a guy up in there at the high post and try and, force the ball to him, a la they could have done that with Grant or Admiral. But I think they'll try and move the ball more and move guys in and out of the high post. Which could be, Pons, could be any of the guards flashing from the weak side wing, any of that type of stuff. But we'll see. I can't remember the last time Tennessee played an all-zone team for a whole game.
So I'll look on that for the break, during the break.
We'll kick off hour two. Get to your phone calls. Hang tight. 865-546-8200. Hour two next.